it is Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Have you ever been listening to a creepy ghost story or haunting history, and you're like, damn, this is so enjoyable, but I wish my friends were here so we could experience it together? That's us, Gina and Catherine, and we'll bring the snacks when you join us on I Scream, You Scream, the podcast where we serve up chilling stories with a side of our favorite ice cream.
Every month, we pick a new flavor of ice cream and a new topic to go along with it. Werewolves, poison, cemeteries, you name it. From deep dives into stories we all thought we knew to your real-world experiences, at this ice cream party, we always get to the bottom of the bowl.
Cozy up with us every Tuesday for your weekly scoop of the most chilling histories, mysteries, and paranormal perplexities. Until then, keep it cool.
And keep it creepy with I Scream, You Scream, wherever you listen to podcasts.
What if I told you one of the most famous ghost ships in history wasn't found during a storm? Wasn't found wrecked, and it wasn't even found at the bottom of the ocean? You'd probably have some questions. Because in 1872, a routine voyage across the Atlantic turned into a mystery that has survived for more than a century. A mystery involving an experienced captain, a family at sea, and a ship that would become legendary. This is the story of the Mary Celeste. Welcome back to Macabre Mondays, where mystery meets the macabre with your favorite Deadly Mary duo. I'm Ale.
And I'm Tom.
Your guides through the strange, sinister, and the spooky. It's where I tell the stories and, you know, he just gets dragged along for the ride.
It's true. Every single Monday.
If you are listening to us, you have already kind of gotten an idea with the new intro song for our Cruise Cabin 13 episodes. If you're watching us, you're going to see that we're not in our usual studio. We are actually in Cruise Cabin 13.
We are. We sure are.
Yes. For those of you who might be new around here, Cruise Cabin 13 is a special Macabre Monday series that pretty much follows us anytime we are out at sea. Now, me and Tom love cruising. Okay.
We are kind of obsessed.
Yeah, we're kind of obsessed.
We're kind of pros.
It's so funny because I absolutely hate the ocean and water. I don't go past the knees, you know? I'm more of a land animal. But I love a good cruise. It's like a little city on the ocean.
Yeah.
I just love it. I love it so much. So.
Oh, I was just going to say, Ale's the beach person. Yeah. Me? That snorkel, she bought it.
That binocular?
But I'm the one that uses it.
That's me.
That's her. That's me. So why do we have the props behind the opposite person that they're mostly used for? Who knows? That's for you to decide.
You're so silly. Well, every time that we're out cruising, we'd love to bring you guys stories connected to the ocean. Could be maritime mysteries, strange disappearances, could be some infamous crimes, maybe some haunted legends.
Oh, no.
And sometimes they may even be based on the destinations we might be going, because one thing about being married to a spooky girl, I think Tom can attest, is that anywhere we go, I've got to find out if there's any history or any spooky stories related to it, or it's just a fascinating to learn every time we travel.
It's rough too, because we even went to Jamaica once, and
oh my God,
we've been multiple times. And one of the times that we went, we took a taxi or something to get to the beach. We just wanted to go to the beach, and we went, and as we got back, she saw a sign and it said, what was it? It was some type of haunted white mansion or something.
Oh my God. It was like the Rose Mansion. It was like a voodoo.
Yeah.
There was a witch. And I was so upset because I didn't know that before we got there. And so it was too late to already go. And I was like, no.
I thought I had a great time. I said, we beached it up. We did a little swimming. We did
it
a
was
little
fun,
tanning.
Yeah. Which I will say, when we did go to Jamaica, we asked, we're like, oh, do you guys have anything? Because that's another thing too. I'm going to ask. We did ask, was like, oh, is there anything like haunted or, you know, any type of legends on the island? And the whole time he's like, no, we're pretty chill over here.
here.
Yeah, which again, like, we don't really makes do sense that. For what they're kind of known for on the island.
Yeah, don't worry about a thing. Literally. Well, it's the same thing in Aruba when we went, because I asked around there too. We asked around in the ABC Islands, and they were like,
yeah, I won't lie, I don't believe Aruba is not haunted. There's definitely
some type of haunted.
There were parts of the island as we were going around that you would look, and instantly in my head I'm saying, there's no way in hell, there's nothing at all that's ever not happened here.
I'm sure, yeah. You but know? Maybe it seemed like they were just not about that. Like, the island just doesn't seem like they're like...
We don't bring that type of energy here.
Yeah, they're like,
we
just don't play with that, which makes sense. But seriously, that's pretty much our Cruise Cabin 13 series. And so anytime we go out on cruise ships, we pretty much bring all our equipment with us and we record. Tom likes to... Well, not that he likes to, but he lugs everything around.
I do. I'm the one that is always weighing the bags.
Yeah.
Having to say,
I'm like, did we get this? Did we get that?
We gotta fit this into here.
We need the extra batteries. We need that. Did we get the mics? Are we getting the stands? We need the camera.
And
we need
guys,
the SD cards.
I just want you to know, podcast equipment is not light.
No.
So it's almost always gonna be in a carry-on.
Yes.
So that you don't hit the weight limit.
So true. Well, if you'd like to see where we're recording from while you're listening, be sure to check out our YouTube channel, Macabre Mondays Podcast. Now grab your life jacket, keep an eye on the horizon, and let's get into Cruise Cabin 13's episode of 2026.
Ooh, I dig the new Cruise Cabin intro.
I know.
I
thank
like
you. I like it. I like it too. That's, you know, come on. Yeah. I gotta spice it up. Our first Cruise Cabin 13 episode of 2026. We are starting strong with a spooky episode.
Oh, son of a bitch.
I
just pause, time out.
Okay.
I just need you guys to also know when we record these,
should
just
we lower
like our
turn off one of the lights? Get
no.
a little spooky in it. It's pitch
Hell
black
no.
outside right now. We don't even
that's,
see anything.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. Just like when we record regular Macabre Monday episodes, we do film at night.
True.
And I just want you guys to know, when we were looking outside as the sun was going down, there was a light fog that slowly became
like
a heavy fog.
Yeah.
A heavy fog.
A heavy fog.
I think I was thinking hazy and heavy. Heavy. A heavy fog. And now it's just pitch black. The ocean is a little bit angry out there too. So
yeah, we're swaying a bit. We're swaying a
yeah.
bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will say, and I'll put a video online as well, and even in this video, I'll record how it looks outside, because night and day, it's like crazy. Or also in the morning, because we wake up pretty early, it looks like glass in the ocean, especially where we're at right now. I feel like you could walk on the water.
Not tonight.
No, I'm saying
but
in the morning.
Last,
in
oh,
the
yes,
morning.
Yes.
Yeah, like,
in the morning, it's insane.
It's so calm, but it's also at nighttime, it's so eerie. It's giving the... Yo ho, dun, dun, dun.
No, for real. It literally is, which yeah. is why I hate these episodes. I'm telling you guys, I hate having to get dragged along for most macabre. But the Cruise Cabin 13 almost always freaks me out.
Yeah,
because
we're in the middle
we're
of the
on
ocean.
On the ocean while she's telling
middle
me
of the
this
ocean.
Stuff.
Yes. In the middle of the ocean. I know. But I will say, ever since we started doing Cruise Cabin 13 episodes, we have gotten a lot of listeners who reach out and they're always like, I didn't know this, or I'm just a lot more cautious that I didn't know before. So it's also pretty much like a way to be more aware of your surroundings and stuff. And a part of me also, some a lot of listeners will reach out and they'll be like, that was really fucking creepy. And I'm like, yeah, well, I'm honored to hear that you were scared by our episodes, because that's exactly
that's
what I want to do to Tom
for. That's
yeah.
her goal.
That's my goal for Tom every time. And to hear that you guys are also feeling that way, my heart is full.
Well, where are we going?
We are talking ghost ships.
Okay.
Yes. Should we turn off one of the lights?
Fine.
Come on, let's get a little in the spirit of the Cruise Cabin 13. I wish we had like a flickering light simulator or something. Ooh, that's a lot better. We are talking ghost ships today. Specifically,
great.
The most famous ghost ship in history.
The Black Pearl.
No, the Mary Celeste.
The Mary Celeste?
Have you ever heard of it?
No.
No. The Pinta, the Santa Maria. No, no, it's
was
the
like,
Mary Celeste.
I don't think I heard that in that Lonely Island song.
All right. Well, before the ship became one of the most famous ghost ships in history, it was just another merchant ship built during a time that the ocean basically functioned like the highways of the world, because there wasn't really any planes at this time. In the 1800s, ships were constantly moving cargo between different continents. Now, in the 21st century, you know, we've got like Amazon Prime, we've got overnight air delivery, we've got, you know, there's still cargo ships, of course, but
next day air.
Yeah, it's not our main source of transportation anymore like it used to be. So things like food, fabrics, alcohol, machinery, supplies, all were being traveled by sea. And because there were no airplanes or modern cargo ships nowadays, or the fast communication, these voyages and trips could take weeks to even months. So imagine that time. Which, by the way, guys, I rode a horse today for the first time.
She killed it.
I killed it. But one of the things that I kept thinking was like, dude, I can't even believe that we used to ride. Way back when. This is how people were fighting wars on horses. Mm-hmm. Bareback at that, okay? Bareback. That I thought was insane. So thinking about this and the fact that this is how they used to transport a lot of goods and all the, and then there's no communication. It's just thinking about a different way of living from a different time is like so fascinating to me. But the Mary Celeste was originally built in 1861 in Spencer's Island, Nova Scotia. It was a coastal province in the eastern Canada.
Okay.
Known for shipbuilding and its fishing communities. And at the time, the ship wasn't called Mary Celeste yet.
Okay.
Its original name was actually ironically called Amazon.
Oh, get out. You're lying.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I swear.
For real?
Yeah, I was just like, wow, what are the odds of that?
That's kind of Jeff funny. Bezos, I didn't realize you were that old.
Yeah, the 1800s, right? I thought that was crazy. Now, this ship was known as a brigantine. Brigantine.
Bridgerton?
Brigantine?
Arnold
no, brigantine.
Palmer.
Please don't do this to me. Which from the quick search that I was doing, it meant that it was basically a two-mast sailing ship.
Okay.
Okay, does that help you with anything here?
I just know that it's got two masts.
Two masts. Now, it was primarily used in the 16th to 19th centuries, and it's known for how fast, versatile, and maneuverable that they were.
Okay.
You can move on your slide because I put photos of the ship. I also put photos of Spencer's Island, Nova Scotia, back in the day.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Okay.
So it was like one of these two masts.
I'll be honest. I was thinking
ships.
Of a pirate ship.
Well, good thing that you mentioned that because, pirates would also use this type of similar ship.
I mean, to be fair, it makes sense. I don't know if you've ever watched regatta races.
No.
I don't even know if they're all technically called regatta. It's where they have a sailboat and they're all racing. And I'm talking Red Bull has a team.
But like this size ship or more
it's
like
not
sailing
like this.
Sailing boat.
It's that size with that many sails.
Sails.
But it's like a catamaran and they will be flying.
I know what you're talking. Yes, I know what you're talking
so
about.
So fast.
Yeah, and it's like a whole competition. Yeah. It's a race and everything.
But
yeah.
The sails are set up this way because when you're moving through the way to think of sailing, think of an ice cube. When you squeeze on the ice cube, that's basically what the wind's doing with the sails.
Oh, okay.
So
that's a good way to see it.
Not just how the movies portray it. Like you have the different types, like the pirate ships that you see in, say, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Right.
Those use the wind behind to kind of pull them. Versus these types of sails, it's more like the ice cube theory to kind of squeeze and it pushes.
And it pushes in.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, too. So these ships, from what I was seeing, were often used for transporting cargo. So pirates did use these type of ships, and even naval forces across the Atlantic would use these type of ships. Mm-hmm. So the Amazon, a.k.a. the Mary Celeste, was built by a group of local investors and businessmen who hoped that the ship would become very profitable through, like, international trade routes.
Okay.
And then when you mentioned Pirates of the Caribbean, and I also was like, because that's where my mind immediately went. Like, oh, is the Black Pearl the brigantine? But from what I was reading, it said it usually is depicted more as a galleon or an East Indiaman inspired pirate ship that was much bigger than these.
Yeah.
And the Black Pearl had like a shitload of guns. Like it had mad ammo, guns, it had several different types of decks. So since the Mary Celeste was a brigantine, that was pretty much a ship that was designed to be smaller, faster, and it's primarily just used for cargo transport.
Makes sense.
Yeah. But almost immediately, things started to go wrong. The ship's first captain was a man named Robert McLellan. And during the Amazon's first voyage, right, Mary Celeste, Robert got pneumonia and died. Okay, he died on the ship.
Ammonia?
Pneumonia.
Pneumonia.
Ammonia?
I was thinking of the household chemical.
Oh. I was like, ammonia? No, it's pneumonia. Menominia. Menoiminoi.
Oh, goodness. We're going to get roasted for that.
No, I know. We definitely are. It's okay.
I'm going to get roasted for
that. Yeah, it's all right. Don't worry about it. Well, he got... I was going to say pneumonia. What's wrong? Yo, I can't. Okay. He got pneumonia and he died on the ship. Now, from what I was reading, obviously sailors that die at sea more often in the 1800s than they do today, of course, right? But
yeah.
Sailors were also extremely superstitious people.
To this day, I feel like they all are.
Yes. Even to this day, there is a lot of superstition with the ocean and sailing because the ocean is very unpredictable. It can be violent. It could be absolutely terrifying. It's like a majestic beast in itself. And I remember I saw like a long time ago, not even, I think it's still true. Like we've only discovered like 2% of the ocean.
Yeah, we've discovered, I believe the scientific way to look at it is we've discovered more, or we know more about space
than we do about our own ocean. Yeah. And I forgot what it was that I saw, but there was like a similar fact about the rainforest that we've barely even...
Like the Amazon rainforest?
Yeah, like something like that.
I never knew that.
Something like that. Like we don't really know much about the Amazon rainforest because a lot of it's either very dangerous, it's treacherous, or...
I mean, that is where majority of these poisonous animals are.
It's true. Yeah,
Cute little frogs. They're like, oh, it's so cute.
Oh,
I'm
so
a touch
colorful.
It. Dead.
Yeah, so yeah, literally dead. Exactly. Now, once something or someone disappears out there in the ocean, most of the time, it's usually going to stay gone forever. That's what makes the ocean also so scary. That's also why I don't like the ocean, because I feel like I'm so vulnerable if I'm in the ocean, because I'm playing in somebody else's den. Like I'm at somebody else's house.
And it's not like the land, for example, if you, worst case scenario, say you had a plane crash and you survived the plane crash. You can just keep walking.
Yeah, I could.
Take a break when you want.
Right. I can actually move. I can actually try and survive. I can try to do. But in the ocean,
when you fall in the ocean,
that's it. I don't got nothing.
If you don't have anything float, you're
that. Yeah.
And you're going to have to do your best to tread water and hope that the current takes you quickly to a shore.
And then you don't get eaten by a freaking shark.
That's true.
Or you don't die from a cramp in the water.
In the water.
No, because treading water for a long time, you cramp.
Charlie horse and
drowned dead. That's literally my life there. No, in the sun, like you got to think about it, and you're gonna be thirsty.
That's true too,
you're also your body doesn't last longer than like 3 days without water.
I was gonna say you can't drink
the ocean water.
Yeah. You can if you had two bowls with plastic wrap.
Right, but that's the least of my. Oh, thank God, I've got my handy dandy filter straw.
But that's also where. What was the movie that we watched recently? It was a scary movie / comedy where it was the girl and the guy.
Oh, you're talking about Send Help. I love that one.
Yes.
Rachel McAdams. Yeah,
yes.
they get stranded on an island because of a plane crash. And it's
but he was so mean
boss.
To him. Or he was so mean to her.
Yeah,
and then
she secretly
had been living this like lavish life because she...
Because she
watched
Survivor.
If you haven't watched the movie,
yeah.
You guys need to go watch it.
It's
but,
so
yeah,
good.
It's
really
so
good. Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was really good. And she did a phenomenal job. I mean, I know Rachel McAdams from The Notebook and the other Nicholas Sparks type of movies.
But even same thing with that. That they crashed into the ocean. The only reason she was able to survive...
Yeah, it's because she
was able to get onto
shore
raft.
And onto raft. Yeah. And she was able to do all that. Yeah. So...
I hate filming these because I swear this is the minute that I start hearing noises right outside our door.
Thomas.
What?
Open the door. Open the door, Thomas.
You sound like Stuart's mother.
Stuart. Stuart,
you can't do that.
Don't do that, Stuart.
Look what I can do.
Stuart. So because of that, as you can imagine, many sailors believe ships would and could carry bad luck. Now, there's this belief, and I'm sure you know of it, I'm sure a lot of you have heard of it, is that renaming a ship could actually
terrible luck.
Yes, it's terrible luck, and it could anger the sea. And another thing that I saw is having a death on board was also considered a terrible omen.
You know, with how much cruising we do and how many people I'm sure, unfortunately, bless their souls, pass on ships.
Yeah, and we don't know what happens to them.
Just from age or whatever. I wonder how many ships are
haunted.
Wow.
This one may be haunted.
Shit.
The one you're on right now.
I don't like this now. Mm-hmm. Damn.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Which that ended up leading me down to like a rabbit hole, because I was like, yeah, what are some sailor superstitions? Because I know it's like renaming the ship. I didn't know that it makes sense. Having a death on a ship would be a bad omen. Mm-hmm. And from what I was reading too, some crews would even refuse to sail on ships or vessels that had developed a reputation for tragedies or accidents, because they would just think, well, fuck that. Like, that's going to happen to me. Yeah. So never mind. And so I started learning that thousands of years before weather forecasting and all the sailors, they would try to explain things that they couldn't understand. So these type of sailor superstitions are centuries old. So more traditions date back to like ancient Greece, ancient Rome, like Viking cultures or medieval type of sailors.
Okay.
But some examples of these superstitions and omens are insane. Okay.
Okay.
One of them is no whistling or singing on board because it could summon storms.
I feel like I've heard this, but I thought it would summon some type of almost like a ghost or water beings or some
interesting.
Shit.
Interesting. Okay. Okay. Well,
but maybe that was because I've watched so much Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah,
growing
it's probably
up,
gotta
so,
like yeah. yeah. Which I find funny, because I'm gonna tell you some of these superstitions, and if you guys have ever been on a cruise or heard of it, I mean, thinking about it now because we're on a cruise, a lot of these we're kind of doing on this cruise.
Oh, great.
Yes, and I'm like, okay, so. Maybe this was just way back when and things are just a little bit different now, because also you're telling me whistling and singing, they got a Dirty Dancing in concert. Okay. Like five levels up from us right now. Are you kidding
me?
They
had dueling pianos last night.
Yeah. They got like a cappella. They got whistling up the storm. It's doing all this stuff. Another one that I saw, it said no bananas on board because they believed it brought bad luck. And it could mean that the ship would be lost at sea.
I don't think I've ever been on a ship that didn't have
bananas. That's what I'm saying. I was like, no joke. And we haven't recorded, like, because obviously, you know, we were planning on like when we were going to record. So we've been on the ship for a while. And since I learned these superstitions, every time we pass the fucking fruit, I'm like, there's that fucking banana. Like, and it's like, they've got a fucking bunch. Okay.
Does the captain know about this?
Yeah. Can we speak to the captain of the ship, please? They used to actually tattoo a rooster and a pig on the sailors' feet because it was believed that these animals would prevent them from drowning and would help them reach the shore, which I thought was very interesting, because you know who has a pig and a rooster?
Who?
One of your favorite Disney movies, Moana.
Yo, that's so true. And she traveled with both of them.
She always traveled with them, and she always did make it on shore. I mean, she
I
also
won't lie,
had...
Now I kind of want to go deep dive into...
And, like, I'm sure there is a connection there, for sure.
You know how Pixar people be. They be doing some deep research to come up with this.
Yeah, no, for sure. Everything has to have a meaning. But I thought that was interesting. I was like, wow, mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Losing your hat overboard also meant that the trip you were on would be a long one. There's another one that's...
I'm about to go throw my hat right off this board to make this a long trip.
Another one that I saw, it said flat-footed people and redheads were believed to be unlucky on a ship, which I'm like, dude, there's like 60.
Yeah, we've seen so many of them.
Yeah, and I feel like we've got, what is it? This ship specifically that we're on, it's got 6,700 people on it.
Even our cruise director is a redhead on this ship.
Oh, stop, I forgot. Yeah. That's crazy. But that's what I mean. You see what I mean? Like, these superstitions, I was like, we're kind of breaking these. Yeah, we're kind of breaking all of these. Now, one of the other ones I saw was that women on board brought bad luck because they believed it would distract the crew. It could even piss off the sea, and it would make weather conditions even worse, which I kind of find that funny and a little bit contradictory, because oddly enough, female figures on ships are also considered good luck. How many times do you see on a ship, well, way back when, at least, they would have a woman carved into the front of the ship as if she was kind of like leading the way.
I also wonder if it was just guys back in the day that were like, I don't want no woman telling me how I need to sail. She's like, shouldn't you pull the mast a little tighter?
She's like, if I were you, I'd probably, I wouldn't do it that way.
They're
like,
why don't you grab the halyard and do this? I think you should use this knot instead.
Oh, it's because we're helping you guys and you don't want to listen to it. And you're just hard headed and you're just like, oh, my God, I could do it myself. And then when you do it the first time and it doesn't work, then you're like, oh, my God, I should have just listened to her the first time. But I don't want to admit that I should have listened to her the first time. Huh? It was also bad to sail on Thursdays because it was Thor's day, which he was the god of storms, or Fridays, because that was the day that Jesus was executed. So technically that was like back in the day was see. I know, to me, I'm like, what a drastic jump from the two there. But
guys, I want Thursdays and Fridays off. What can we come up with?
Well, I don't want to sail on Thursdays and Fridays.
Thursday. All right. We can't sail.
We can't sail. Yeah. So killing seabirds also brought luck, and renaming ships angered the sea god. Now, many historians think that renaming superstitions do trace back to the belief that the sea god knew every ship by name. So isn't it also in like, is it Davy Jones?
Uh-huh.
Oh, no. Well, anyways, we've got Poseidon, right? And so supposedly they believe that Poseidon, I don't even want to say just Poseidon, but the sea had a roster with every ship's name on it, because they're pretty much the god of the ocean. Yes, exactly. Yeah,
and you can rename a ship.
Yes.
But it is a very specific process that you're supposed to go through. There's a lot of the ceremony that you have to go through to rename it. In order to, what many sailors believe, to not piss off the gods and
yes,
the
which
ocean.
I actually went on a deep dive because I'm like, okay, rename a ship. So I was like, all right, let me Google that. Like, how do I rename a ship if I wanted to do that? And I was reading that there is this traditional way ceremony that you need to do to a boat or a ship if you're going to rename it. The basic idea is, one, you have to remove all traces of the old name. And that means even erasing the name. Because to me, I was like, okay, like just erase it from the side of the boat. But there's a lot of ships and boats that have the names on the life rings, on the dinghies, on the logbooks, on the charts. They even, down to like the pillowcases.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's got to be stripped down. And then two, you must then ask for forgiveness from the sea gods. Three, you officially announce the new name. And then four, you offer champagne or wine or rum that, to the sea.
And that's part of even christening. Every time you watch the every time they launch a new ship,
yeah,
a cruise ship, you'll see they'll actually take it. It used to, and I don't know what the technical tradition is, but it used to be you always threw it at the back of the boat.
It to the boat and
but
it has
then
to break. Yeah,
I've watched and it seems like now the tradition is that people throw it on a string. They'll throw
That's
a champagne bottle at the anchor.
Oh, I haven't seen the anchor. I've seen them do it on the boat.
Yeah.
Regardless, it's an offering.
Yeah.
It's an offering.
I've seen
yeah.
the anchor a few times, so I don't know if that's like a new tradition. Or
right. That's interesting.
Something.
Okay. Well, again, you change the name to do it the proper way. You just have to do these rituals, and you pretty much are also risking offending
the sea gods. I was
going to
say, there's
gods.
Still people that I personally, if you ever buy, that's why, for example, when I think of buying a boat and being able to put your name on it, I have to buy a new boat.
Yeah.
Because you just
it's just like not even something I don't want. And a lot of owners take it seriously.
I don't screw with that.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. I'd be like, yo, if her name is onomatopoeia, best believe we fucking sailing on onomatopoeia. I'll be like, onomatopoeia is gonna be on everything. I'm gonna onomatopoeia on my pillowcase, onomatopoeia on my
it
my
sounds like
boat.
You're saying I'm a pee on my pillowcase.
Just
oh,
know we're I'll be like, yeah, you guys want to go sail on onomatopoeia? Yes.
All right, so needless to say, we obviously have all of these superstitions, these rituals, etc. Robert obviously
died. So this is already a bad omen.
Yeah.
This is already a bad
omen. So now he is more or less unintentionally, because no fault to himself.
Right, no fault to himself at all.
He's caused more or less the ship to be cursed.
Essentially, but people are already thinking that the minute it was built, it must have been cursed, because the first captain on this ship, on the Mary Celeste, ends up dying.
Yeah.
Which is already not really, really great. So over the next several years, the Amazon slowly started building exactly that kind of reputation. So the ship was actually in several accidents after that. It was damaged multiple times. It crashed into other vessels. It had storm damage. So naturally, that would mean it needed some expensive repairs, right? And the ownership of the ship kept changing hands because people were losing money trying to keep it running. Yes.
The minute I'd buy it and then all of a sudden I get the history book, I'd go, up for sale again.
Yeah, no, literally. And one of the later owners was an American businessman and sailor named Richard Haynes. Richard bought the ship after it had been heavily damaged and partially wrecked near Cape Breton Island in Canada, but insisted on scrapping the ship completely because he believed that it could still be salvaged and rebuilt into a profitable cargo vessel, right? So the ship went under major reconstruction. Parts of it were rebuilt and enlarged, and eventually the vessel was renamed what we know her as today as Mary Celeste.
Okay.
So she's no longer Amazon, which randomly I started thinking, right? That's my other thing, too, that I was, and mind you guys, apologies, but like every time I do research on an episode or something, and especially something like, I don't know anything about ships. So part of me is also like, why do we always call ships a she? Like, you know, I know women are the best and, you know, we're strong, we're beautiful and we've.
I never thought of that.
I had this random thought and I was like, why do we always say she? Right. Because anytime you're on a ship, it's always a she. And a ship also has a godmother. You know, there's always a godmother to every ship.
You know, this is why I love that you're a Y person. There's days that I'm like,
Tom's like, oh my God, just.
But I gotta say, I also love it because you ask questions like this that I just never thought of.
I just get so curious when I'm doing the research on certain cases or stories or whatnot. And that was one of the questions that I had because I'm like, why are they always seen as women? I mean, like, bet, queen, because we should be. I mean, of course. And that's when I learned a few theories as to why ships were referred as she's. One of them being that ships protect and carry sailors like a mother carries her children.
Huh.
And so the ship brings sailors and whoever's on board to safety. You know, she is mother. She is mother.
And she mother, is mother knows best.
Mother knows best. Another one that I saw that could be that many European law languages assign gender to nouns, which I can even see that because in Spanish, if you think about it, to give an example, it's like la casa, which means the house, but it's feminine.
I was going to say, yeah, it's feminine.
And if you say el libro, which means the book, it's masculine because the A is feminine, the O is masculine.
I was even thinking baño.
El baño, right. It's like the bathroom. But it's a masculine.
Masculine.
It's masculine, yeah. And so some historians think that the tradition of calling ships she could have just been influenced by similar language patterns throughout Europe, which I also thought was super fascinating because I'm like, oh, okay, that's interesting. But it could also just be that ships are just viewed as this like beautiful and powerful beings that when you see that, because even on our cruise, it's magnificent. Like anytime I see a ship, I'm like, wow. Like I just, anytime I see it, like, when this ship that specifically that we're on,
guys, this thing is the biggest freaking thing I've ever been on.
She's a baddie. Yeah, like when we saw her, we were like, wow, she's a beaut. She is a beaut. So good. And so another thing that I saw is that some sailors also develop a personal relationship with their ships. So that's most likely why you hear sailors or mariners refer to the ships as she. Which I thought that was fascinating. But as you can imagine, that would make some sailors uneasy because in maritime superstition, renaming a ship was considered incredibly bad luck.
You know, it's interesting, too, that they named the ship a she or just kind of give that gender to it. Because I think about my BMW I used to have.
She was a she.
She was a she.
Her name was Misty. Same thing too with the car. With car guys, I feel you're like, ah, this is Chad. No. Usually this is Lucy.
It was, and I would always, and remember anytime she leaked oil, like most BMWs, and I remember I used to always be like, come on, old girl, come on, yeah, we got it.
Give
like,
us a little bit more spunk, yeah.
You know?
But that's what I mean, I just find that so fascinating. I'm like, oh, I know, women are like the best, what can I say? But even after they rebuilt Mary Celeste, the financial problems continued. So running a merchant ship was extremely expensive, repairs are very constant, cargo routes were very risky, and if a voyage failed or you had cargo lost, the ship owners could lose massive amounts of money. Eventually, the ownership of Mary Celeste was divided among multiple shareholders. One of the shareholders was a respected New England sea captain named Benjamin Briggs. And unlike some of the ship's previous owners, Benjamin Briggs actually had a really, really good reputation. He was an experienced captain. He was very well liked. He was deeply religious and known for being very calm and responsible, very level-headed. Okay. Other captains viewed him as a very careful and cautious person, and also a careful and cautious captain, not reckless at all, which honestly makes what happened later even harder to explain.
Oh, great.
By 1872, Benjamin Briggs had partial ownership of the Mary Celeste and was chosen to captain the ship on another Atlantic cargo voyage. And this wasn't just some routine work trip for him. Benjamin Briggs decided to actually bring his family aboard. He brought his wife, Sarah.
Oh, no.
And his 2-year-old daughter, Sophia. Now, I also saw... I know, I hate that.
I'm already foreshadowing.
So they also had another kid, which was a young son named Arthur, but he actually stayed behind with relatives so then he could keep going to school. And in November of 1872, Benjamin Briggs, his family, and a crew of 7 men boarded the Mary Celeste in the New York Harbor, preparing to cross the Atlantic Ocean, and none of them would ever be seen again. On November 7th of 1872, the Mary Celeste departed from the New York Harbor. Its destination was Genoa, Italy. Now, I think that's how you pronounce it. Genoa?
Whatever, something like that.
Genoa.
What the hell?
Genoa, Italy.
Anyways, yeah.
This is also a very historic port city along the northern coast of the Mediterranean Sea. Mary Celeste was carrying more than 1,700 barrels of industrial alcohol. And this is an important fact to clarify, because when people hear alcohol, most of the times you think, oh, party, drink, rum, whiskey, right? All that. But it was actually industrial alcohol.
Oh, shit.
Yes, which was used for manufacturing and industrial purposes. And it was highly flammable. So on board the ship was Captain Benjamin Briggs, his wife Sarah, their daughter Sophia, and the 7 crew members. Now, most of the crew members were experienced sailors as well from Germany and Denmark, who also had very solid reputations and years of experience on the sea. At first, the voyage seemed relatively normal, but around the same time the Mary Celeste left New York, another merchant ship also departed from the harbor, and this one's name was the Dei Gratia.
Ooh.
Yes. The name pretty much means by the grace of God in Latin.
Ooh.
I know, I was like, ooh,
that's nice.
Violin. So like the Mary Celeste, it was also a brigantine-style cargo ship crossing the Atlantic Ocean. The Dei Gratia was commanded by Captain David Morehouse. And according to some historical accounts that I found, David Morehouse and Benjamin Briggs may have known each other professionally before their voyages, which makes what happens next feel even stranger.
Mm-hmm.
So weeks pass. They left out a sea on November 7th, right? 1872. And on November 25th, of 1872, a couple weeks later, Mary Celeste made its final known log entry. At the time, the ship was near the Azores. They are pretty much a chain of Portuguese islands that are located far out of the Atlantic Ocean, and they're west of the mainland in Portugal, where they're absolutely stunning. One of the islands actually kind of looks like a planchette. Like a Ouija planchette.
Oh, okay, yes.
I also put photos in the slide if you want to see those. So the last log entry was on the 25th. Then after that, there was silence. No distress signals, no confirmed sightings, nothing. Then days later, on December 5th of 1872, the crew of the Dei Gratia spotted a ship drifting awkwardly through the Atlantic about 400 miles east of the Azores. At first, something immediately seemed off because the ship's movement looked very strange. Some sails were damaged, others were kind of hanging loose, but even weirder, there were no crew members that could be seen on board. Captain David Morehouse ordered several men to board the ship and investigate. And when they climbed aboard, they discovered the ship was the Mary Celeste, completely abandoned with no captain and no crew. No sign of Sarah Briggs or little Sophia either.
What about cargo?
Just an empty ship drifting through an open water like a ghost. as the boarding crew searched the ship of the day, you know, the Dei Gratia cruise is searching, they started noticing details that made the scene even more unsettling. The ship's lifeboat was missing.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
And I read that for a ship of her size, before the Titanic changed pretty much safety standards, mm-hmm. the idea was that there was always at least one boat for emergencies. Now, in today's day, you have to have enough to fit everybody on the boat.
Yeah, and then some.
And then some, exactly. So a rope was hanging from the side of the ship that could have possibly connected to the missing boat at the time, but there was about 3.5 feet of water sitting inside the hull of the ship, which, from what I was learning, guys... because now I'm like a sailor, the hole is the bottom of the ship.
I love you.
I was like, the hole? That what you mean, the hole? At first I was like, the hole?
The hole.
Yeah, the hole. But I was thinking like, I was like, the hole? There was a hole on the ship? I know, there's a lot going on with me while I was researching. Now, to modern day listeners, right? AKA me, it sounded terrible because I immediately was like, oh no, if there's water in the hull of the ship, then like, are we sinking? Right?
No.
Okay, exactly. But for a ship of this size in the 1800s, oh my God, are you hearing? Is somebody tapping on the window?
Keep going.
For you? Is there a ghost?
No.
There could be a siren out there.
Stop. I'm going to use my bilge pump to get the water out. That's what we use modern day, guys.
So for a ship of this size in the 1800s, that amount of water likely would have not been enough to sink it. But one of the ship's pumps also wasn't functioning properly. So that
Ships back at this time also had pumps?
Had some type of pump. Huh. Mechanics, yeah.
That's
some
interesting.
Type of pump. I don't know if it was anything... Obviously, it's not nothing what we have nowadays.
Well, yeah,
yeah,
but
for sure.
I thought that the stuff that we have on ships now, I thought that was just modern day sailing.
They was using shit like that.
Yeah,
back
that's
then.
Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, they was using stuff like this back then.
No joke. I thought it was like back in the day with the little steel buckets.
Oh my God! Help!
Buckets up, yeah. Just like in the cartoons. Yeah. There's a
like,
line of guys passing the buckets up.
We need to empty out. I mean, they also still had certain type of equipment on the ship that helped them maneuver through the ocean as well. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's nothing that we have nowadays, but they did have something to help as well.
Yeah.
So one of the ship's pumps wasn't functioning properly. So that could have made it difficult for Benjamin to really judge how much water was on board accurately, right? Now, another part of what they noticed was that the cargo was still there.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So most of the barrels of the industrial oil were untouched.
Oil or alcohol?
I'm sorry. Yes, my apologies. The barrels of industrial alcohol were untouched. And I know they said that 7 or 8 barrels were empty, but they had reported that those were actually made from a specific type of wood that would easily leak. But out of the 1,700 barrels, 7 or 8 of them are empty. Because those are the ones that are made with a different type of wood. Mm-hmm. So apparently they leak.
See, it's interesting because... The ship didn't sink.
Mm-hmm.
It looked damaged.
You didn't
have much water in it.
Yeah. There's a lifeboat missing.
And then the lifeboat missing, but the whole rest of the crew.
And the crew's belongings. The crew's belongings, everything is still inside. Everything is still. Food and water supplies are still on board. There's no signs of struggle. There's no blood. There's no obvious violence. But the most important unsettling point they noticed was that the ship, even though it was a little bit damaged, it was still seaworthy, which means it was still sailable.
Yeah.
It was still sailable.
That's kind of what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
Is nothing is giving the sign of we need to abandon ship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That doesn't make sense to me.
Yep. I agree. It
especially
didn't make sense to a lot.
Knowing the size of what more than likely these lifeboats were, there's no way you could have fit a whole ass crew on there.
I actually looked that up because I was kind of curious. I was like, well, at this time, like how much? Because I thought the same thing. I'm like, well, could everybody have fit on the lifeboat? Now, remember, there's only 10 people on the boat.
Oh,
so
I see,
the
I
lifeboat
see.
That they did have would have at least fit 10.
Oh.
Yeah.
But still.
Still, I know. Which, that's exactly the horrifying question that gets raised, because why would such an experienced captain willingly abandon ship? From what it looks like he willingly abandoned ship that was still capable of sailing.
Yeah, that's very odd.
It's interesting. Yes. So over the years after finding the Mary Celeste, there are some versions of the story that would kind of get exaggerated by what was found on board. Now, there's stories like half-eaten meals, untouched cups of tea, or very dramatic scenes frozen in time that became part of the Mary Celeste legend.
We loved a Hollywood-fy, even back in the day.
No, and you want to know who Hollywood-fied this shit? Okay, you'll know exactly who I'm talking about, because a lot of historians believe that many of those details were added later through a fictional retelling of the case from Arthur Conan Doyle, which we'll talk about him in a bit. But honestly, the real documented facts that I was seeing are already kind of eerie enough, because it's everything I told you already. Mm-hmm. You have this experienced captain who's also on board with his family.
Yeah, so that's
so
the other
side. So he's got everything
Why
to lose.
He,
yeah. Yes, that's his wife and his kid, and he's also got his son back home, and he's experienced, he's very respected, he's very level-headed.
That's the other thing, it doesn't make sense to me, because initially my mind went to, and I'm sure some of our listeners were thinking the same thing, maybe he took his family because he wanted to go start a new life.
Oh,
but then in that case, I would have escaped with at least some type of cargo.
But then what happened to the crew?
But none of the cargo's missing. And
well, 7 to 8 of the
were leaked.
Or were empty.
But again, we kind of assumed it's because of the wood.
Right.
So that makes sense. But the crew is also all missing. There's no signs of any fight. There's no blood. So that, to me, is also where that doesn't sound like it would be plausible, because you would have seen some type of struggle. Nobody's going to let the captain just casually walk off
and be like, good luck. Yeah.
See ya.
I also feel like if that was something that did happen, like let's say he was like, oh, I want to start a whole new life. His son is still back home. You must be a real piece of shit if that's the case. But second, I also think like in the middle of the ocean.
I know.
It's not like your life rat's got a motor.
No, it's true.
To me,
They just had like regular oars back then, right?
So that's what I mean. It's like, it's just interesting. It's very fascinating. So after the crew of the De Gratia found Mary Celeste by the Azores, they took control of the ship and they sailed it to Gibraltar. Now, Gibraltar, the only time I have ever heard about Gibraltar was recently, because your mom and John actually went to Gibraltar on a cruise.
Oh.
Yes. And that's why I also messaged them a couple weeks ago, and I was just like, hey, so you guys were in Gibraltar, right? And they're like, yeah. And I was like, oh, because this episode that I'm doing is actually, there's a part that has taken place there. And this was it. And if you're wondering why Gibraltar specifically, it's because it was actually one of the major maritime legal centers at the time. It is a small British territory located at the southern tip of Spain, right near the entrance of the Mediterranean Sea. So ships were commonly brought there for inspections, investigations, and legal salvage claims, because recovering an abandoned ship could actually result in a financial reward. Because if you find an abandoned ship and you bring it in, then you were allowed something from that, because you literally just brought in a ship.
Wait. Is there also a theory that the crew that found the ship
from the De Gratia?
Yeah.
There is a theory with that as well. Yes. Uh-huh. So once Mary Celeste arrived at Gibraltar, Spain, the mystery only deepened. Because when it arrived, it was around December 1872, because they found it around December 5th, right? The authorities immediately began investigating what had happened on board. But almost right away, the suspicion started spreading. The official person overseeing much of the inquiry was a man named Frederick Solliflood, and he was the attorney general at the time. Now, Frederick did not believe that the Mary Celeste was just simply abandoned. He wasn't buying that at all. He was suspicious of the crew of the De Gratia, the ship that found the Mary Celeste that was drifting alone in the Atlantic. And part of the reason was because of the maritime salvage laws at the time. So if a sailor recovers an abandoned ship and brings it safely to port, they could receive a percentage of the ship and the cargo's value as payment. So the investigators started asking uncomfortable questions to the crew of the De Gratia, right? Did the crew of De Gratia murder everybody on board? Was it some kind of like insurance fraud? Was it a scheme? Did Benjamin Briggs intentionally stage the disappearance? Who knows?
Yeah, because maybe he...
Maybe it's
was
like a
gonna
scheme.
Split. Yeah, wow.
Maybe. But he, Frederick was like, I'm not buying it. I am not buying it. So the investigators carefully inspected the ship looking for signs of violence or foul play. And at one point, Frederick even believed the marks found on the ship may have been evidence of blood. But eventually, the test suggested that the stains were most likely not blood at all.
Hold on, what kind of test did they have back at this time?
I don't know. I didn't look that. That's the one question I didn't have.
What were they doing? Taking their
finger? Something. Yo, you know, actually, now that you say that...
Doesn't taste like metal, not blood. Ketchup.
I am kind of thinking that you're saying that because have you ever seen the movie Sleepy Hollow?
Like the one
with Johnny Depp?
Oh, yes, yes.
Yes, okay. In the movie, there's moments where, well, he finds like a dead body and he actually kind of like touches stuff and he, and I'm just like, oh, because I'm a, again, it's a movie. I'm not entirely, I have never looked up the history behind it in the sense of like, is this what they used to do back in the day? But he was essentially like one of the doctors or he was an investigator or something. I completely forgot already, but he was... Like, nowadays, you don't touch the crime scene at all. But
no.
Back then, he was, like, moving that shit, fucking flip-flop, and he was opening his mouth. He's like, oh, there's something in here, all that. So,
wait,
you
think,
saying
yes,
that makes me laugh.
Now I'm remembering this, yes, yes.
I love that movie, though.
It was,
so
like,
nostalgic.
A younger Johnny Depp, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, okay.
Mm-hmm. Real good-looking younger Johnny Depp, yeah.
Whoa.
I'm just saying, he looked good in the movie.
It was a mega pint.
It was a mega pint, yes. So... Investigators never really found evidence proving that it was murder or piracy or fraud connected to the disappearance itself or a scheme or whatever. And in the end, the crew of the De Gratia was cleared of any wrongdoing. Even though the investigation delayed them receiving the salvage payment, they did receive payment at some point, but it took like months after they discovered the ship.
I'm suspicious.
Are you don't believe in the De Gratia?
I don't.
Well, they were friends, though.
Here's the
they were
thing.
Also friends.
Here's the thing.
It was believed they knew each other.
Here's the thing. I'm suspicious of everything at this point.
True, at this point.
You know? Everything.
Well, you want to know what's the craziest part of the story? Because after this happened, right?
Please tell me they renamed the ship again.
She went back to service.
Oh, of course she did.
The Mary Celeste went back to service.
No offense. But who's the dumb mother that decided to put the ship back in service?
Every time, when I was researching this, I was like, are you kidding me? If we're talking superstitious, except especially way back when, we're doing like check. It's like a checklist of like,
I'm gonna just
can
say
we
right
hit
now,
all the superstitions
these
here?
These are some of the worst entrepreneurs and investors I've ever heard of in my life.
Well,
you know what we should do? I'm already not making great money, but let me just take everything poured into the ship that's already been losing everyone else money,
right,
but I'm going
right.
to be the one that makes it profitable.
I also,
I'm
yeah,
going to do it.
I wonder if like ego had a play into it.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, like, what do you mean? It's a silly old maritime superstition.
Yeah.
Come on, let's just pummel some money into it. It's because he didn't have enough money. I mean, who knows at the time? Yeah, because to me, I'm like, just let her go. It clearly, every time that she's in service, something is happening. Let her go, okay?
All right. So she's back in service.
She's
How
back in service.
How is this going to go?
And for the next 13 years, the ship, Mary Celeste, continues sailing under the under different owners and captains. So we're still switching out, okay? It
of
was
course.
Carrying cargo through the Atlantic and the Caribbean, just like any other merchant ship. Still, its reputation, as you can imagine, was following it everywhere. By then, newspapers had already started sensationalizing the mystery. Stories were spreading across Europe and America about the ghost ship found empty at sea. Some sailors reportedly viewed the Mary Celeste as unlucky or cursed. And I even saw that some sailors would be like, nah, not sailing on that one. Like,
yeah,
be
I
like,
would
I gotta
agree.
Feed my family,
I'd
but
agree.
I'm not sailing on that one. Yes, not sailing on that
I'll
one.
I'll go work the coal mine.
Yeah, I'd rather do anything but sail on the Mary Celeste. And over time, there was a lot of fictionalized retellings that started blending with the real story. Now, I mentioned Arthur Conan Doyle, mm-hmm. earlier. He's one of the biggest authors that contributed to the mythology and lore of the Mary Celeste. And you know who he is. We all know who he is because years later, he became the famous author that created the character Sherlock Holmes. No, no, no. He wrote a fictional story. Well, he wrote a fictional short story years before Sherlock Holmes, and it was inspired by the Mary Celeste. And he called it J. Habakkuk Jepson's statement. J. Habakkuk Jepson's statement.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't even know why this name, but it added dramatic details that were never really historically documented, and it became super popular at the time. And over time, many people began repeating those fictional elements as fact. So when you do research this, you'll find a lot of mixed elements from his story to the actual story of the Mary Celeste. And again, he was an author and a writer, and he, you know, he kind of like added a lot. He fictionalized a lot. He even changed the name, the ship's name from Mary Celeste to Marie Celeste. And there's versions that he included the murder, yeah, revenge and conspiracies and all that. But it was still really interesting to see the way that he saw the mystery itself, because also he's an artist. He's creating a different story. He's storytelling. Yeah. But the real story of Mary Celeste still wasn't over yet. In 1885, more than a decade after the crew vanished and Captain Briggs, the ship ended up in the hands of a captain named Gilman Parker. And what happened next sounds almost unbelievable. Now, Gilman Parker and several others became involved in an insurance fraud scheme.
Oh, no. Here we go. Another insurance fraud with this boat.
The plan was to intentionally wreck the Mary Celeste and file insurance claims on cargo that had been falsely declared as more valuable than they actually were.
What's wrong with the people getting this boat?
I don't
know.
And then poor Mary Celeste, like, she's just...
They're treating her like some like cheap slut.
Yeah. Oh my God, damn. So near the coast of Haiti, Gilman Parker deliberately wrecks Mary Celeste and runs it into the Rochelos Reef. I know. And sorry, guys, if I'm mispronouncing this. I always try to look it up beforehand, but then, you know, I forget sometimes. Oh, man. And so do you know where the Rochelos Reef is in Haiti?
No, I didn't, but
it's right next to the DR.
Wow.
To the Dominican Republic.
We were like
just there. I know.
Also, and go ahead, roast the hell out of me. I don't think I ever realized that Haiti was actually like connected to the DR.
I don't think a lot of people know that though. Yeah, I wouldn't, don't beat yourself up because a lot of people don't know that.
Like, no joke, that the whole island that we were on was the DR.
The DR? Oh, I think that's a common misconception though. Yeah, that's a common misconception. But the plan failed and investigators uncovered the fraud. He ended up dying from poverty because he had to pay back all the payments that he received from the fraud scheme.
Serves you right. You need to treat her nicely, buddy.
Come on, Gilman Parker. Which, it's another thing, too, that I just find so fascinating because you treated the ship poorly, terribly. Oh, it's like the ship already has such bad
luck.
And
the ocean took your ass.
You want to take from me?
I'm going to take from you.
I'm going to take from you.
Eye for an eye.
Literally, so he ended up dying from poverty because of the fact that he tried to do this insurance scheme. But because he did that, after decades of storms, accidents, ownership problems, disappearances, all these rumors and the international mystery we all know, Mary Celeste was finally destroyed. It actually, its remains were slowly claimed by the ocean at the bottom of that reef. So if you think about it, we were around there. Isn't that crazy?
And you know what? I would love to dive stuff like this. So for those of you that don't know, again, I love the snorkeling stuff. We got one of the snorkels that you can free dive with.
Oh, yeah.
My next step, I want to get my diver's license so that I can actually dive, because I would love to do trips where I get to explore reefs like this and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I think that would be so fun. So cool.
You're so courageous. I always thought it was cool when I see them in the movies or like videos, or when I see other people doing it, but I can't. I just have a fear and phobia of the ocean.
I showed you. I have the one friend that goes and messes with
sharks.
Yeah,
hot dogs.
He takes hot dogs. He's a photographer, and he takes hot dogs with him, and he'll just feed it to the sharks.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah,
and
no,
that's how
not
he
my
gets
thing.
Them to come up. He'll kind of hold it in his hand, and then
I just yeah. You know, like the minute I get in the water, it's not an even playing field for me. So
it's not.
It's not.
And that's where you have to have the respect that
yeah.
you're in their territory.
No,
know?
Seriously, it's for sure. And to me, I'm just not big in the. And I could swim, man. Mm-hmm. I was actually the only swimmer in my class in middle school that was able to go in the deep dive in the deep side. And so I had to swim the full fucking lap, so everybody did half a lap.
Damn. I know. No offense to your school, but nobody could swim?
It's not that they couldn't swim, but I guess they couldn't pass, like, the test of being on the deep side or whatnot. I was shocked I passed it. I was like, damn, it's actually not as bad as I thought.
You also love treading water, though.
I do, because my theory is that if I'm in the water and I'm moving, nothing is going to touch me. But if I'm not wrong, I think that it'll actually attract more, right?
Well, no, but I've told you, when I worked at that Boy Scout camp, uh-huh. I'd be treading water teaching a class, and then I'd have a little fish come up and bite me on the back.
Oh, God.
Fish, for those of you, don't freak out. Fish don't have teeth. Well, not all fish. But when you get bit by like a bass or a bluegill, it just kind of feels like somebody's taking a suction cup and squeezing it
on
your back.
It's like a kiss.
Oh, it's a rough kiss. It feels like a pinch.
I just don't want to feel anything when I'm in the water. That's what freaks me out. It's just freaky to me. I just can't. I have a phobia. It's scary. I mean, have you ever had the phobia when you're in a school, like, well, you're in a pool and you think there's a shark with you?
No.
Okay, I guess maybe that's just me.
But the lake, yes. I used to always think that sharks were in lakes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Lakes
not,
freak me out, too, though.
They're not. Sharks aren't in lakes. But
they're not. They're not in lakes. Yeah, I know. Everyone's like,
little me
not.
Didn't know that.
Well, that's what
for
I mean.
Some
like,
reason.
It's kind of like a phobia. And I wouldn't be shocked if a lot of people have that same phobia that I'm describing. Mind you, imagine the population's like, one, it's me. It's like the only person that thinks there's a shark in a pool. But it's just something is just so eerie about water. And it's just so eerie. I would just not be able to do it. It's just creepy to me. But the mystery surrounding what happened to Mary Celeste and everyone who vanished from the ship in 1872 would also disappear with it.
What?
Because we never knew what happened, which is going to lead us to theories. Because to this day, nobody knows exactly what happened aboard the Mary Celeste when Benjamin Briggs was captain. There was no final message ever found. There were no bodies ever recovered. And because there were no survivors, investigators were left trying to piece together a story using only the condition of the ship itself, which is going to lead us to the theories, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Over the years, countless theories have been suggested. And honestly, part of what makes this case so fascinating, in my opinion, is that several explanations sound very possible, but none still fully explain everything. Now, one of the most widely accepted theories involves the ship's cargo. Now, remember I said the Mary Celeste was carrying around 1,700 barrels of industrial alcohol?
Yes.
Remember I mentioned that some of them leaked?
Mm-hmm.
And that matters because industrial alcohol produces fumes that are highly flammable.
Uh-huh.
So one theory suggests that Captain Briggs may have smelled strong vapor coming from the cargo hold, and he feared that there could have been an explosion going to happen. And that fear wouldn't have been unreasonable because, right? What else can you do?
And his family's on board, so he might be extra
and
cautious.
And he's also the captain of the ship. He's got to protect everyone on board, right?
But what happened after, though?
Okay, because that means, right, if he's got these fumes, he potentially could be thinking, well, one spark inside this wooden ship carrying all this flammable alcohol and all this material, it could have been catastrophic quick, right? Could go up in flames.
Also, who thought that was a good idea? Let's put flammables on a wooden ship.
They're doing the best they can. They didn't. You know, that's all they had at the time.
Oh, man.
So some investigators believe that Captain Briggs may have temporarily evacuated everyone into the ship's lifeboat while waiting at a safe distance from the ship to see if anything happens. So that could also explain why certain important navigation tools were missing because Captain Briggs may have...
He wanted to make sure they could still navigate.
Right, so they kept the life. Right,
okay,
so that makes sense,
okay,
right?
Okay.
It could have been that he left thinking he'd come back on after, you know, hey,
mm-hmm,
let's give it some
mm-hmm.
time, see if anything happens. But that theory suggests that the crew may have also tied the lifeboat to the Mary Celeste using a rope while they waited nearby.
See, which is where the rope came in.
Came in,
okay.
Exactly. But at some point, the possibility is because of the rough weather, or maybe the line snapped or something, the lifeboat became separated from the ship and they drifted apart. Yeah, and once that happened, the people on board may have been either left stranded in the open Atlantic while the Mary Celeste drifted without them. So that's a super plausible theory.
I'm solid. Liking this.
I like this one, even though earlier you're like, I don't trust the crew of the De Grata.
I'm just saying.
I know. So, and I feel like out of all the theories I'm going to tell you, this one is the few. Well, this one's the one that I feel like explains multiple details at once.
I mean, that, and we have a trend, in my opinion. Usually the first theory is the one that I'm always the most, I think it's this.
Yeah, I know. I like to start off with the strong ones, but a lot of the other ones also kind of make sense. I'm going to tell you about it, right? Because the other thing too, right? That missing lifeboat. The missing navigation equipment, which was to believed that it was the ship's chronometer, and there's no signs of violence. And so why would such a cautious captain suddenly decide to abandon an otherwise seaworthy ship, right? Yeah. So this kind of would make a lot of sense, because that's actually one of the biggest reasons why the Mary Celeste remains so mysterious, because for sailors, abandoning ship was generally considered to be the absolute last resort. You do not, like, that's the last thing you're going to be doing. And there's this maritime saying that I saw online, and it said, you step up into a lifeboat, not down into one, which means that if a ship, even if it's damaged, is usually safer than a small open boat in the middle of the ocean.
Okay,
that's cool. That makes sense. So it's kind of like a way to live by it. And its advice is pretty much that saying is just to discourage people from abandoning a still floating ship or boat for a life raft in the middle of the ocean. Because like your chances are going to be better on the ship than they are going to be on a life raft. So if Captain Briggs ordered everyone into the lifeboat, he likely believed more than anything that staying on board was probably going to be more danger. No, staying on board, it was going to be more dangerous than leaving.
I see what you're saying. Yeah,
exactly. And this theory just pretty much suggests that he just had a fear of the alcohol
explosion. He was cautious.
He was being cautious. That's the other thing, too. He was also a very cautious person. Okay. Now, another major theory involves this condition, the condition of the ship itself. Now, remember that one of the pumps on board wasn't functioning correctly?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, some historians believe that Captain Briggs may have thought the ship was taking on far more water than it actually was. And in the middle of the Atlantic, with the damaged sails, the rough seas, maybe, you know, the malfunctioning pump, and his family on board, any type of experienced captain could have made a decision based out of fear or extra precaution.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So especially because the weather conditions in the Atlantic, from what I was reading, can change quickly and violently. Other theories involve rogue waves or water spouts.
Oh, bruh. Okay.
Now,
you didn't know about water spouts, did you?
I did not know about water spouts. You know, all I've ever known is up came the rain and washed the spider out.
Now, I'm gonna give you another one. I think they're called funnels or something like that. Whirlpool. I can't remember.
Oh, God, dude.
Those are real.
This is why I don't trust the ocean.
Like where the water is.
Yeah. No. Trust me. Yeah, it's like I get it. The rogue waves thing, right? Because for context, for anybody who doesn't know, because I freaked myself out even more before coming on this cruise, because I'm like, oh, I've heard of a rogue wave. I've never heard of a water spout. I didn't know that was like a thing. But the rogue wave, I'm like, you know what? How the hell do you know if there's a rogue wave? What I was reading is that most of the time you can kind of see them, but a lot of the times they can happen naturally.
I just figured Mandalorian and Grogu would be right on top of it.
Baby, they don't be
Rogue One.
You're so funny.
I know. I will say, in New Jersey, if you're on the shore, and I've seen it once, I think actually I have a video somewhere.
What?
There was a water spout. There was a really bad storm a few years ago right before you and I met, and I was on the shore and I was watching out and literally watched the water spout hit. It was ended up being two water spouts, and then the fire department on the beach confirmed that it was two water.
That's fucking water creepy. Spouts. So pretty much for all of those that don't know what a water spout is, aka including me, it's pretty much a water tornado. And to me, I immediately was like, the fuck you mean a water tornado? Like, I always thought I had to worry about land tornadoes, but now I got to worry about water tornadoes. Like, nothing is safe. You know, what are we even doing out here? The water tornado freaked me out because there could be multiple water tornadoes at the same time, which are...
There were two. I saw
water spouts. Yeah, no, exactly. And no joke, like, honestly, that kind of had like a new fear unlocked for me. I was like, another reason why I don't fucks with the ocean. There's another reason I just don't mess with it, okay? I just can't. But the rogue wave, okay? Because I was thinking, which is basically just an unusually massive and unpredictable wave that is capable of, no joke, like striking ships and without warning.
Yeah.
So rogue waves, for a long time, people thought that they were sailor myths because many people believed the sailors were actually exaggerating. Which isn't that fucking crazy?
I could see that. So many people, I think, kind of give a cognition with certain things like that where it's like, oh, you're just being dramatic. And
right. And it's like, this motherfucker's out here sailing the cargo you need. And he said he saw this. It's just like they kind of chalked it up as to it's a myth or maybe hysteria or, you know.
The prime example with the Bermuda Triangle. And then how many pilots and boats and... Now we constantly are going through it, but I remember back in the day, History Channel did a whole thing. We even covered an episode on it.
We sure did.
But there's been planes and stuff that have flown through it, and you see it spins the navigation around. So it's like it confirms it, but then you still have the naysayers.
Yeah.
Because
they
just don't, and sometimes I think they don't want to buy into it necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because either it's fear, so if they buy into it, then it makes that fear real.
Right.
Or I think sometimes they just genuinely think people are being a little over the top.
I also feel like a lot of people need to see to believe it. You know, same thing like with ghosts. A lot of people are like that too. They're like, oh, I don't believe in ghosts. But then how many stories have you heard when they're like, I never believed in ghosts. I was a skeptic. And then they had an experience and they're like, I now believe in ghosts.
I believe in ghosts, but I don't believe in ghosts. That's just my saying. Everybody that listens to Macabre Mondays knows this. I don't believe in them because I don't want to.
Yeah, Tom's like, I think it's better that I
believe
don't.
In them because I know that they are real. It sucks.
Well, you know what's crazy? So when I was researching, I was finding out about the rogue waves, right? Because I'm like, oh, damn, that sucks that the sailors, they were kind of dismissed as myths. Because a part of me also was like, well, what about the Moby Dick now? Now you got me thinking, right? Because rogue waves were real. The Megalodon, right? They say that's a thing, so why would Moby Dick not be a thing? But not until too long ago, on January 1st of 1995, stop laughing at me.
That's like a children's fairy tale. I know it's technically like an adult book, naysayer. But I'm still like...
Oh, you naysayer. Okay. Right, if we believe the Megalodon is real, we also only know 2% of the ocean, sweet cheeks. Okay? So who knows what's out here?
Anyways.
Okay, and I think isn't the blue whale or the sperm whale one of the biggest whales?
Sperm whale is the largest, isn't it considered a mammal? I don't know.
Okay,
whatever.
Anyways, all right, it's not a big deal. But not until January 1st of 1995, there was actually a massive rogue wave that was scientifically recorded off of Norway. And when that wave actually hit Draupner platform in the North Sea between Norway and the United Kingdom. And that was actually the first time a rogue wave was scientifically measured at approximately 84 feet tall.
Holy shit.
Yes. And to put that into perspective, okay, because I love a good comparison, all right? Think about like 3 school buses vertically stacked on top of one another.
You guys want to know what my wife did when we got on the boat? Because again, this is the biggest boat we've ever been on.
Huge.
And she asked, how big is the boat? I said, it's 54 yards wide, 357 yards long. So what's that in like subway footlongs? I'm like, what?
And well, I asked
or you know what?
Fields.
Better football fields. And I was like, okay. I said, 57 yards. The width? I said, that's like a little over half a football field. The length? 3.5 football fields.
I'm a visual
and
person.
She went, ah.
I get it
and
now.
Like,
yeah, I get it now. Wow. I'm a visual person, okay? So sorry. I'm an artist. Well, I thought that was kind of crazy because that's the first time it was scientifically recorded. And nowadays, now we know it exists because of that wave. Because it's crazy. Before it was kind of like, oh, it's probably just a myth. Like, we've never really seen anything like that. But when that happened,
then we were able to get the confirmation.
It's like, now it was accepted worldwide by oceanographers. You know, they're real. They're usually rare from what I was reading. And modern day ships can actually just spot them using radars or satellites. But they also have like weather modeling stuff, equipment systems to reduce the risk the best way they can. But the spooky part of
it—I knew they controlled the weather.
The spooky part of it is that they can't fully predict every rogue wave, so you really are at the mercy of the sea at the end of the day. Like, it really doesn't matter.
We always will be.
We always will be. Yeah, and I even read that some have estimated to be over 100 feet tall.
Damn.
So that's like ginormi. Yeah, that's freaking normie.
I was gonna ask you a question, but. And just to give the listeners input, when we're doing episodes in our home studio, we are able to research stuff live. So if there's a question that one of us doesn't know, we can research it live. When we're on our cruises, we don't do internet packages because it's a chance for us to disconnect.
Yeah.
And so then when we have questions, we don't get to answer them right on the spot. Yes. But my question was going to be, what's the difference between a rogue wave and a tsunami? Because I know tsunamis are really, really big waves, and
but
they can take out
and
flood entire towns.
I think the tsunami is the way that it's formed.
Oh, because the tsunami is formed by tectonic
plates. Yeah, being moved. And I saw that shift. That a rogue wave is like waves stack. It's a bunch of waves pretty much traveling from different directions that just happen to line up and create a massive wave, or maybe even like ocean currents, and they pretty much make this fucking ginormous
wave.
Okay,
well, there you go. We didn't even need to search it. Yeah, we were able to combine our smarts. Thank you for using Tom and Ali.
I mean, maybe we're wrong, but I think that's it. I think that I know the rogue wave is that, but the tsunami's for sure.
As of the day that we're recording this, we're confirming this
that
is true.
This is true, yeah. Someone's going to be like, guys, I'm so sorry to break it to you, but no. But no. Yeah, and the water spout thing, it's just pretty much like a water tornado. It just forms over the water, which I'm like, I don't like that at all.
No.
I don't like that at all. But water tornadoes are also nowhere near as destructive as a giant land tornadoes are, which is like cool. It's the ones that you see like in Oklahoma and Twisters.
I grew up in Tornado Alley.
I know you did. Oh, you're right. Like in Indiana and all that. Yeah, no, seriously. They're still dangerous for smaller ships like the water spouts, but the damage. So like imagine being on a wooden ship in 1872. If you saw a water spout, that'd be fucking, you'd be like, yo, what the fuck? Yeah, that'd be insane. Well, because of this, some people believe that severe weather may have terrified the crew, or maybe it damaged the ship enough to convince them that abandoning was a safer option. So those are pretty much like the logical theories, right? But let's talk about some of those darker theories.
Oh, there's still more theories. Okay.
One of the theories is that maybe there's piracy involved. Okay, maybe there's some type of pirates, right? But investigators still found no clear evidence of, like, the stolen cargo or any violence. Because of my other thing,
crossing
too, right?
Crossing out. Next.
Crossing that. Mutiny was another possibility, although there's very little evidence supporting. Some people have suspected insurance fraud from the beginning. Like you said, you thought it was the De Grazia.
Yeah, also
you,
still.
You're like,
this one's still one of the tops.
Keep that one. Especially because the ship already had a history of financial problems and the changing of ownership. So maybe it was kind of like a planned scheme all along, but who knows?
There was one smart investor that said, how the hell am I going to get my money back?
No, for real. Like, oh, I can't.
Insurance.
My egos. Yeah, literally. But again, investigators never uncovered any type of evidence showing that Captain Briggs was planning a disappearance or involved in something like that, or even the day
Maybe
Grazia.
That's just because he was that damn good.
Yeah, that's true. But even today, like, most historians don't believe that Benjamin Briggs would have willingly endangered his wife and daughter to just stage a scheme. Like, it just doesn't line up with who he was as a person, and also everything.
Just to get them to buy it more.
Tom's really liking this theory, guys. But then, of course, there are paranormal theories.
Okay.
Over the decades, the Mary Celeste became one of the most famous ghost ships in history. People connected the story to curses, sea monsters, unexplained creatures, and eventually even the Bermuda Triangle. Even despite the fact, though, that the ship was nowhere near the Bermuda Triangle when it was discovered, right? But this is kind of like where that fiction starts blending heavily with reality.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, there was books, movies, articles, television specials, TV specials often exaggerated parts of the story to just make it more supernatural. But the truth is that the documented mystery never really, I mean, I don't think it even needed embellishment because it's already creepy in itself.
Yeah.
Like just a random ship floating, an empty ship that is obviously still sailable, just floating in the middle of the ocean. And you just come across that. That is so eerie.
It makes me think of, is it the Black Pearl? No. I can't remember.
It was.
Is it the Black Pearl? But I thought...
But they're ghosts.
I thought there was an unmanned ship that hadn't been claimed.
Isn't that what it is? No.
Maybe. I don't know.
Okay.
Anyways.
Yeah.
All right.
But still, like, and you know what's funny? Even while we were, for example, like in the morning when we saw it, it was like super misty. It was like gray. It was fucking
creepy.
Even
as the sun was going down at night.
Yeah,
that's how it was.
So creepy looking outside. And I, because I knew the story. And I was like, oh my God, like if I saw a fucking random abandoned ship that looked like a ghost ship, I would be freaking the hell out because it is creepy. And I'm also out in the ocean. You know what I mean? Like, so imagine them at the time, like you're also out in the ocean. You're probably like, what the hell is going on?
Yep.
It's just such a creepy, it's like so chilling to think about it. But there's something about the story of the Mary Celeste that continues to bother people even nearly 150 years later. And honestly, I don't think it's because of the ghosts. I think it's because there's, again, no concrete evidence, ending, final answer. We still don't really know. There were never any bodies. We don't know why they would have left.
I feel like the reason it still haunts people is because it also confirms to an extent a lot of the theories and what's the other term that we had used at the beginning? A lot of the
conspiracy?
Superstition.
Oh, the superstition.
A lot of the superstition around sailing and the ocean and everything because they renamed it. They had this.
Right.
They had a death. They
like,
did
right
this.
Like right from the start. Yeah.
So you think about it and there's a lot of things that whether you believe in it or not, it almost kind of gives confirmation that some of those superstitions are legitimate. So
right.
I see that as why it kind of haunts.
Right.
And if you're a sailor, if you're a captain, if you're even just working on a boat, I could see why the Mary Celeste story is important to people that work in
right because it's like it's just another proof of like why
yes.
you don't mess with the rituals
exactly.
why
and,
you don't mess
you
with the
just,
ocean
yes
and that's the thing too and it's so eerie and chilling. I just already find that people vanishing out of thin air is so eerie and chilling, so then to know that a whole crew and a family just went missing, disappeared, mind you the main theory and idea is that most likely they died at sea, obviously, when they left. If it was the fumes and stuff and they decided to leave in the life raft, the first theory, and they drifted apart, then unfortunately, like, they were at the mercy of the sea. But that's just so chilling. Ugh, it's so, so creepy. And it's so sad.
I agree.
It is so sad. Well, let us know your theories in the comments, friends. Like, I really am curious to hear what everybody's thinking because
insurance fraud?
Tom's like, please, anybody else thinking the same thing that I'm thinking? Well, that's today's episode, friends. Stay tuned because we're going to have two more episodes of Cruise Cabin 13. I'm super excited to be able to talk about these episodes and I'm super fascinated to talk about these episodes and keep freaking Tom out. I mean, because, you know, that's like my favorite job.
it's tough, man.
That's my favorite job.
I genuinely...
What
the
was that?
Fuck? You heard that, right?
I heard that.
Shut the...
Thomas. Open the balcony door.
Okay. I wish we could take you guys to where you could kind of almost go into a VR perspective because...
It's eerie.
Even while we had to take a break real quick to swap our SD card around... on the camera, and during that break I took a step out to the balcony, and I'm gonna just let you guys know It's so terrifying.
It's creepy deaky.
Because you look, and this is the thing that I think freaks me out. You look down, the water's blue right where the light is kind of glistening
right,
off
the ship.
Right,
but it doesn't go further than that.
But the minute the water's past the
boat,
pitch black. And all I think of is how terrifying it must be when you see and hear the stories of people that have gone overboard at night.
Yes.
During the day, it's still going to be terrifying.
Still terrifying.
But at night, I mean, Jesus. Jesus.
I know. It is so super. Yeah.
So we stay to the inside.
Yeah, at nighttime, we don't really stay near the borders of the ship. We kind of stay in the middle. We like to stay nice and close to the center of the ship, okay? Thank you for joining us aboard of Cruise Cabin 13. If you enjoyed today's voyage into the strange, the sinister, and the spooky, be sure to subscribe so you don't miss the rest of the special series.
Ooh.
You could find Macabre Mondays wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow along as we document our adventures at sea and also on land. Okay. And if you know more about today's story, have a theory of your own, or caught a detail we might have missed, let us know.
And we'd also love to hear from you. If you have a story that's strange, sinister, or downright spooky, doesn't matter how small you may think it is, please send it our way. Especially if it's maritime mystery, paranormal, or true crime around maritime, send it our way. That way we could potentially cover it on our future episodes of Cruise Cabin 13.
Or anything for our land episode.
That's true, too. You can email us at MacabreMondaysPodcast@gmail.com or head over to MacabreMondays.com and submit your story. Yours just might be featured in an upcoming listener episode.
Until our next port of call, stay curious,
ooh,
stay safe, and remember, the ocean keeps more secrets than it gives away.
Why do we have to end it like that?
We'll see you next Monday. Bye.
Deuces.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games that's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.